from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you and by the Center for the Performing Arts, presenting the 2011-2012 season in three first-class venues.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli-Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll meet a couple of the dancers who are part of the Indianapolis School of Ballet's Nutcracker.
I'll get a preview of Bob Harbin's Boogie Woogie Holiday Show.
And I'll have a chat with Dr. Matthew Bolton, the new president of CTS. Plus we'll also have our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. The Indianapolis School of Ballet's founder and director, Victoria Liris, uses the Balanchine style as the foundation for the training she provides her students. Travis DiNicola recently sat down with two of those students, both from Roncalli High School, Samantha Reister, age 14, and Regina Mack, age 16. Both dancers will be performing in the ballet school's upcoming production of The Nutcracker at the Scottish Rite Cathedral. Joining them in the studio were Victoria Liris and Kathleen Partlow-Strauss from the Indianapolis School of Ballet.
So let's start with you, Vicki. If you would, give me just a little bit of background on the Indianapolis School of Ballet and tell me about your school. I know that your school, one of the things that you bring to it is really the foundation for it is Balanchine and your approach. And so tell me a bit about your school and what you're doing.
Absolutely. I founded the school August of 2006, and what's different about our school, it's the only professional ballet school in downtown Indianapolis, in the heart of Indianapolis, facing the Capitol. Mm-hmm. So we have beautiful views. Yes, our school, one would say, is Balanchine-based. That's because of my background, having grown in New York City and a student, therefore a product of a School of American Ballet. I was there for 9 years until I graduated, and I danced on many occasions as a child with New York City Ballet. But our school is different in that way, and also by the professional quality student productions we put on at our downtown home, which is at the Scottish Rite Cathedral.
Which is a great place, a great venue for you to perform at. Your studios are actually sort of about a block or so away. Really, as you mentioned, great studios with a great view of downtown Indianapolis. But the two main performances you do a year, you get to do at Scottish Rite. That's a great partnership for you
guys. Yes, it is. Our school is located at 502 North Capitol Avenue, and we're just literally two blocks away from the Scottish Rite, but that theater is just so glorious. And the first time I walked in there, I just knew that's where I wanted our productions to be held.
Yes, certainly. And productions include, of course, Nutcracker each year during the holiday season. And then in the spring, last year it was Coppelia.
Yes.
What are you working on for this spring?
This spring is very exciting. It's a mixed repertoire program, and we have named it Russian Treasures. It is, it consists of music all by wonderful Russian composers.
Okay.
And we will be doing a Balanchine ballet, our first Balanchine ballet, which is Valse Fantasy.
Exciting.
Very exciting. We just got permission, other than the Grand Pas de Deux that we've done in the Nutcracker, and also Tarantella, which is a duet. Those are Balanchine pas de deux that we have produced in the past. But this year we're doing Valse Fantasy, which is music of Glinka, and Act 2 of Swan Lake.
Great.
And Act 3 of Raymonda. And of course, Swan Lake is Tchaikovsky music, as is the Nutcracker, and Raymonda is of Glazunov.
If you could, for our listeners who may not be as familiar with different ballet styles, could you just sort of briefly explain the difference between maybe a Balanchine style as opposed to a Russian ballet or other techniques?
Well, that's the interesting question, because the Balanchine technique is really based on Russian technique. I mean, he was born in Russia and came to this country in the fall of 1933, and he opened the School of American Ballet in 1934. And really the foundation of the technique I was taught in his school is that of Russian technique. But what's wonderful with the Balanchine is that he developed this speed and precision mm-hmm. and musicality that were incorporated in his choreography. And it is, to some extent, slightly on the contemporary side. It has mm-hmm. an edge to it, but it's the foundation, the roots are definitely classical ballet.
I think those are words that come to mind for me, the sense of speed and sort of having a bit of a sharp edge to it.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let me talk to your dancers that are here with us today. And again, Samantha Reister and Regina Mack, you're both students at Roncalli High School and have both been involved in Indianapolis School of Ballet, I know, for a while. Sam, let's start with you. If you would, tell me just a little bit about, if you summarize your experiences with the Indianapolis School of Ballet.
Well, I've been here for 4 years now, and this is going to be my fifth Nutcracker. Mm-hmm. I have performed in the spring productions of Coppelia, Midsummer Night's Dream, and so that's really exciting, and hoping to do everything for the next spring production.
And you also got to attend the New York City School of American Ballet this summer, is that right?
For 5 weeks over the summer, yes.
Tell me a bit about that.
It was really exciting because they're different teachers that I wouldn't really get on a regular basis, like mm-hmm. Katrina Killian and Cheryl Ware, and they were just amazing. And seeing the level of other dancers in the studios were different because everyone is just so spectacular there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just gorgeous, and trying and getting to see New York City Ballet and American Ballet Theater and
what a great
performing
opportunity.
Was amazing.
Now, is that something you had to audition for? Or
We what? Auditioned mm-hmm. in January and just got pre-registered okay. a couple days ago for mm-hmm. the next audition.
Great, great. Well, best of luck with that.
Thank you.
Regina, so I know you've been with Indianapolis School of Ballet quite a while as well.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about your background.
This is my fifth year with the school, and this will be my fifth Nutcracker as well.
Okay. And you also had a very prestigious summer intensive experience, right?
Yes. I went to, it's called Cotsbon International Dance Center, which it's actually it's called a ballet farm.
Okay.
So there really wasn't anything to do there besides dance. And it was a pretty intense experience, but it was so much fun. And we also got to visit New York City on the weekend.
Excellent. But, yeah. So it sounds like, I mean, both of you take your dancing very seriously. Regina, are you thinking about, a professional career in ballet? Is that?
Yes, that's what I'm working towards.
So how does Vicky prepare you for that?
Well, we train a lot, 5 to 6 days a week usually.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also really helpful how we have such great productions, which can prepare you for all the performances that you'd be doing as a professional dancer.
Mm-hmm.
And the classes are also very challenging.
So now, and this is obviously in addition to school. I mean, that's quite a lot of work. So, you know, coming, you know, from school every, you know, pretty much afternoon or evening for rehearsals and weekends as well.
Yes, we both come straight from school. Mm-hmm. And then we're usually at the studio till like 7:30.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And, of course, then when you're rehearsing a show, it even goes longer. Coming up in Nutcracker, you're going to be a featured soloist, right?
Yes, this year I'm dancing Arabian and also the Dewdrop Fairy.
Okay, so the Arabian Coffee? I'm trying to remember that. It's been a couple of years since I've seen the Dewdrop Fairy. That certainly comes back to mind quickly.
Yeah, but I don't know if you remember the little hand symbols.
Okay.
That one.
Okay, very good. So how's rehearsal going so far for you?
It's going really well.
Mm-hmm.
We can't believe it's coming up so fast.
It's coming up very soon.
Yeah, rehearsals are going well.
Yeah, very good. Okay, Sam, tell me about, you said this is your fourth Nutcracker, I think?
Mm-hmm. This is my fifth Nutcracker.
Fifth Nutcracker, okay. And then you've got a couple roles as well, right?
Mm-hmm. I was Clara in 2010, I think.
Mm-hmm, okay.
And this year I'm going to be featured as the doll and party scene. Which
Excellent.
Is really exciting.
Good, good, good. So now, with those roles, how does that work? And I'll open this up to the three of you. Vicky, do you have auditions for specific roles, or do you cast them based on maybe what, you know, certain skills they're working on, or you want them to be working on? How does that all play out?
We do have open auditions, mm-hmm. but we also have a great, great pool of talent at our school to mm-hmm. select from, and the roles are extremely challenging because the choreography is by no means watered down and mm-hmm. a lot of standing around and posing. These ladies are dancing. Our snow scene is that of Robert Rodham, the choreography, and the only other organization at this time doing it is Nashville Ballet. It used to be done by Pennsylvania Ballet mm-hmm. and Milwaukee Ballet, Pittsburgh Ballet Theater. So this is choreography that's truly not intended for young teenagers.
Very challenging. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they're getting a workout, as is our Waltz of the Flowers. It's challenging, and I want to say my choreography is challenging. I push them hard because I need to prepare them for that professional career, for those who choose to.
Of course.
To pursue that.
So through the audition process and working with them as students, I mean, you chose for Sam and Regina to take on these roles. Tell me a little bit about why it is.
It has to do with maturity, mm-hmm. Technical ability, size, fitting into costumes.
Sure.
But really, costumes, on occasion, we can make new ones. But it has to do mostly with technical ability and maturity, that they can go out there and handle the role and really mm-hmm. dance their best. You want your dancers to go out there and feel good about what they're mm-hmm. doing, not have to worry, am I technically capable of doing this? You know, am I going to fall out of a turn? They should feel really good about what they're doing.
So using those roles to challenge them, but to also really give them a chance to be featured.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a necessity. It's part of their growth.
So, Regina, what's the most challenging part so far for you about this year's production of Nutcracker?
Definitely rehearsing Dewdrop, because I mm-hmm. actually did Arabian last year as well. There
okay.
are just a lot of complicated turning sequences in this one, so that's what I've been working on.
Now, is a lot of that on point then? Or?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's all on, okay.
It is
yeah.
all on point, and mm-hmm. these turning sequences have to not only be done technically well, but they have to be done with immense finesse.
Mm-hmm.
And style.
So, Sam, how about you? What's the big challenge for you right now?
I always say snow is the hardest because it's so fast, and mm-hmm. this choreography and the spacing is so complicated. But Marzipan, we have to stick those doubler turns this year, so yeah, that's very challenging.
Mm-hmm. Well, good. Well, I have no doubt at all, Vicky, that the production is just going to be fantastic. I mean, you guys always
thank
do
you.
Such a great job, as you mentioned, at the Scottish Rite, which is just such a beautiful stage to see dance anyway. Mm-hmm. But you always have great sets and great choreography and great students as well. Do you have any guest artists that are coming in as part of this production of Nutcracker this year?
Yes, we do. We have certainly Paul Vitale, mm-hmm. our beloved Paul Vitale, is coming back to do his role of the Drosselmeyer. Meyer, mm-hmm. and we have Michelle Meltzer and Chloe Durier, Chris Lingner and Jacob Taylor, mm-hmm. The Sugar Plum Fairies and Snow Queens, and then of course the Snow King and the Cavalier. They're alternating the roles.
Oh, very good.
And all four of those dancers are from the prestigious ballet department at Indiana University.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Lingner and Michelle are students that have worked with me for many, many years.
Mm-hmm. And very talented.
Very talented dancers. So they're coming back, certainly. The one thing I wanted to mention about mm-hmm. our sets, our gorgeous backdrops are done by David Higgins, also of Indiana University. And
mm-hmm.
and as we have talked in the past, what's unique about our production of the Nutcracker is that it is indigenous to Indianapolis, with the backdrops being that of the Morris Butler House, the facade of the house.
As if
you're standing
yeah.
on Park Avenue looking at the beautiful historic home. And then, of course, once you enter into our party scene, that is the Victorian parlor of the mm-hmm. Morris Butler Museum home.
So, that's great. I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah.
That's a really great local touch.
Oh, yeah.
What is it like for the two of you as students and then rehearsing in these shows to have these guest artists come in? I know, Sam, you've certainly seen a lot of them in the productions over the years and seen students who have gone on from being students within the school to now pursuing either college studies or adult mm-hmm. studies or being professional dancers. Sam and Regina. Regina, well, you respond first, if you will.
It's just really inspirational. I mean, they're so great and so hardworking.
Mm-hmm.
And just looking at them, you can tell that's where you want to be, and that's what you're working.
What you want to do.
Yeah.
And it's kind of unique to have a school where you have that opportunity to work with mm-hmm. dancers like that who are a little bit older and pursuing their careers, and to see that and actually get to rehearse with them. Mm-hmm. Sam?
And just the same thing. I mean, seeing their progress from when I started there and seeing Michelle and Chris taking classes mm-hmm. and now seeing them perform lead roles on stage at IU, it's just incredible. I mean, even when they come back to take classes with us,
it sounds inspiring.
Really
yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent.
We also have another graduate, Betsy Boxberger, who's at Duke. And, of course, you know Betsy from Coppelia. She was Coppelia several years back, and she's also danced the role of Sugar Plum. This time she's dancing the role of Dewdrop, as is Regina.
Oh, great. Very good. So. And I know that you open with performances on the 16th through the 17th and the 18th at Scottish Rite. Before I let you go, Kathleen, I know you've got some great sponsors that have helped make this possible. Who's been responsible for the shows here?
Well, our title sponsor, Printing Partners, has been just like an overwhelmingly helpful supporter for many years, but especially this year, and we're glad to have them on board. And it's something that really helps us out as far as our reach into the community. We do a special preview performance on December 15th, and we're also doing a toy drive at our performances, and Printing Partners is helping us get the word out to these underserved populations that come in, people who wouldn't normally be able to come to a performance get to come on that Thursday night before we open to the public. And the toy drive will be accepting toys at all of the public performances, the 16th through the 18th, and Printing Partners is really helping us with that. And those toys actually
unwrap
new toys, okay. And those will benefit the Children's Bureau, which is a wonderful organization here in Indianapolis.
Very good, very good. Well, ladies, thank you all for being here on Art of the Matter today, and I wish you all a happy holiday.
Thank you, Travis.
Thank you. Thanks.
Travis DiNicola with ballet dancers Samantha Reister and Regina Mack, both from Roncalli High School, and Victoria Laris and Kathleen Partlow Strauss from the Indianapolis School of Ballet. Their production of The Nutcracker takes place from December 16th through the 18th at the Scottish Rite Cathedral. More information is available at indieballet.org, indieballet.org. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Quick! Fill in this phrase, boogie woogie. No, sorry, it's not Bugle Boy. It's Boogie Woogie Holidays. Bob Harbin's annual holiday show at the Athenaeum takes its cue from some swinging 40s and 50s music and movies, as Sharon Gamble learned recently.
All right, so Boogie Woogie Holiday, as soon as I heard that, I thought of Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy and started thinking about holiday appropriate lyrics. Is that where
you
this title
are
comes
so
from?
Bright, Sharon Gamble. You are
I'll send
on
you the
money.
Check next week.
We are doing a beautiful musical review with holiday music, and if you're familiar with the shows we've been doing at the Athenaeum, we always try to mix in a little something else, so that usually by Thanksgiving we're all like, we've had so much music of the holidays crammed on us in elevators
and shopping malls and
everywhere else, that we try to put something else in there to sort of lift our spirits and keep our interest going. And this year it's big band sound. So that's indeed what that Boogie Woogie refers to.
Now, I have a question for you. You're unusual, I'm unusual in liking big band music because it predates us by a generation or two.
Uh-huh.
You have a very young cast. Were your cast members mostly
those are
familiar?
Really good pictures on the poster, aren't they?
Are you saying they might be a couple years older than the publicity photo suggests?
We maybe have a few years on some of these people. And you know what? What's fun? It's fun to mention a song that I'm so familiar with because of movies or history, mostly movies, I must admit. And these people will look at you like,
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Come Rain or Come Shine, what?
Oh.
Peggy Lee, who?
Oh, ow.
And I know. And you have to sit there and sort of play this, who's who game. So first that they can kind of identify who the person is. But, we are graced, those of us who have computer access, with this amazing thing called YouTube. And it is an amazing tool. You go on there, and there's Frank Sinatra singing a duet with Peggy Lee, and whether you've actually seen it or not, because some of those, like you say, predate us, thank God. but whether you've seen them or not, it's such a wonderful memory of those songs and those people. So that's what we're trying to bring back, a little bit of history that doesn't go too far back.
Yeah. What are now? How did you find the arrangements? Who's music directing this one?
I had heard that the amazing indie Cool City Jazz Band here in town, at one of the concerts on the canal. And I talk with them. And so we are using some folks that they use for our instrumentalists. And John Skaggs, who is someone who is also identified with them, is our musical director this time. And so he will be our keyboardist. We'll have a bass. That would be the stand-up variety bass.
Mm-hmm.
And we will have percussion, a trumpet, a trombone, and two saxes.
Oh, my gosh, that's a hot combination.
So it's going to be – it's and we've taken wonderful arrangements from all over the place that all sort of garner us back to that time.
I have to ask you, you do these beautiful creative musical assemblages. Are you a musician? I've never asked you that.
I played the saxophone in high school band.
You ever pick it up again?
Yes, but I've never played it again. No,
but not publicly, huh?
I'm afraid of it. I left it, and I still have my tenor sax at home, and it sits there in this beautiful case.
Do you sing?
Oh God, no. and those of you around town who go to musicals, you certainly would understand why. I love music. It's one of those, you know, if you had a wish, you know, that would be it for me, I think. I so admire singers and entertainers who you know deal in music. And it's wonderful to play with these songs. Wonderful to, things that you haven't heard that you've forgotten, and it comes back and it's, oh, that, you know, someone else has that same, you know, reaction, you know, when they hear it. And we're using a couple arrangements from our good friend John Austin Butch, who's no longer with us, but we're kind of putting him in this show as well.
It's a lovely tribute.
A couple of songs that he arranged in the past for himself that I was able to find, and so we'll be celebrating him as well.
How do you work? So where I was. What I'm curious about is you're working closely with musicians, but you're not a music director. How does that partnership work? How do you work with your instrumentalists and your vocalists? And especially since with each production, you seem to use a little bit different set of instruments. And what you've just described could easily overpower vocalists unless the balance is tended to carefully.
True, and thank goodness for these things that we're using right now, the miracle of soundboards.
Yeah.
So we do put many of all of our singers are on microphone,
mm-hmm.
and as are the instruments. So then we have always a magician in the back of the auditorium, furiously working over a soundboard, trying to get that blend as perfect as possible so that the band does not overpower the singers. It does help always if you can have the band behind them as opposed to in front.
Mm-hmm.
But that is something that we blend. And outside of that, you know, I think that a lot of times we tend to take the band for granted. And I think right up front, we try to make them know how much we appreciate what they're doing, and we couldn't do what we're doing without them. It's a hand-in-hand situation. So even though it's that singer who's out front, you know, getting the applause, we try to make sure that the singers understand that, you know, without those people behind them, you know, they're sunk. You know, that they might still be able to sing something, but it wouldn't sound nearly as entertaining.
They don't have the context and the texture.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
What are some of the your favorite songs that made it in this year?
We are doing a little combination. I don't know if you remember a film called For the Boys.
I've never seen it. I'm aware of it.
We are doing two songs from that film. It was a Bette Midler film. That took place in at this time period. So we're doing a little combo of Come Rain or Come Shine with Stuff Like That there. And the two of them blend beautifully. It's a romantic, beautiful, so, you know, we're going to have the amazing Katie Gentry walking through the audience, serenading some of our gentlemen in the audience, and then she's going to get up on the stage and finish out with stuff like that there, which is a big boogie-woogie song. We're also doing The Prayer, which is a beautiful, beautiful song that I think was first recorded by a gentleman who was in the Australian Idol contest and has been recorded by Josh Groban since that time. It's a beautiful song. We're doing some delicious Christmas music just on guitar and voices. Huh. So it'll be very simple and not as big band produced. And then the band's going to do, you know, the jingle bells and the, and we're doing a tribute to Hawaii.
I was not expecting that.
Tribute to Hawaii. While we're all in the ice and snow, we're all going to be taken back to the land of Mele Kalikimaka. So that's a big favorite of mine.
I just flashed on a picture of the costumes for that. But
they're all done and ready to go on tonight. So we'll have to wait and see. But yes, there's going to be some grass skirts and some coconut brassieres. It's going to be an amazing thing.
Hey, I understand that Santa might appear, or is that true?
Well, you know.
I know you don't want to reveal everything.
It's all going to be according to his schedule.
I see. Okay.
He's a very busy guy in December, and but if not Santa, he's promised that one of his people would come by.
He's got people.
He's
of
got
he does.
People. He knows people.
Now, this is great toe-tamping music. Is there room if audience members are so moved to dance? And are you okay with that?
We're going to leave a little space. And the hardest thing, I think, is that when you start a song, the audience doesn't necessarily know that there's enough time. And
yeah.
Do you remember in high school,
it
took you two songs to decide if you had the nerve to ask someone to dance?
Yep.
So by the time you get up there, it's over. So we, you know, we're still sort of toying with that this afternoon, and we'll have that figured out. But the main floor area does have a wood floor, so it's very possible.
Yeah. So people should wear their dancing shoes when they're heading
down. And your dancing outfits and your dancing attitudes.
I love it.
Sharon Gamble with Bob Harbin. You can see and hear and dance to Boogie Woogie Holidays at the Athenaeum Theater, December 2nd and 3rd, 9th, 10th, 11th, 16th, and 17th. You can get more info and tickets at bobdirects.com. That's BOBDIREX.com. BobDirects, BobDirects.com. Ho, ho, ho! Oh, I'm just trying to get
you
in the spirit, Sharon.
You don't have the girth for that role,
no,
there.
Oh, thank you. That's very kind of you.
We need to make some cookies for you.
Cookies sound like a great idea. I'm trying to think of good ideas of gifts to buy. That's why I'm playing Santa right now, Sharon. And I bet we've got some great ideas of local arts events and art to buy this holiday season on that calendar we call
What Do We Do? Well, I have one of those right at hand. If you are listening on Friday night, if you're listening on Saturday, you're going to have to do something else. But if you're listening on Friday night, it is First Friday, so make sure you hit up some galleries, buy some local art for someone you love, or buy locally made food goods. Here is a sort of one-stop shop where you can do all of those things at Indiana Landmarks 1201 Gallery. The First Friday show, and this is new for them, this Friday until 9 o'clock, so you have to hurry, rush over there right now. But you can buy both artwork and handmade goods, jellies and jams and chocolates and so on and so forth, all made by people who are part of the Indiana Artisans. And that's going
very
on
good.
Yep, at 1201 North Central Avenue, just till 9 tonight. So hurry.
I love creative partnerships between arts organizations and businesses. And here's a really neat one that I want to share with you. Printing Partners is doing something very cool this year. Instead of doing holiday gifts with their clients and such, they're working with a whole bunch of arts organizations to highlight those organizations and also do something that makes a difference. And so Printing Partners is a great local printing company. And what they're doing, there's a couple of different ways. So at performances of Christmas Carol at the IRT, When you're there, you can take a tag from the St. Vincent Health's Giving Tree and then purchase the gift listed on the tag and take it to Peyton Manning Children's Hospital. And then for the ISO with their Classical Christmas, if you buy your tickets using the promotion code RED, R-E-D, then Printing Partners will donate $5 to Little Red Door Cancer Agency. Again, that's for ISO Classical Christmas. Also, if you're attending the Indianapolis School of Ballet's Nutcracker, then they are encouraging you to bring some new unwrapped children's toys for the Children's Bureau. If you're attending the Symphonic Choir's Festival of Carols, then you're encouraged to bring school supplies for IPS music programs. If you're going to the Boston Brass at the Palladium, then they're doing a clothing drive. And finally, Actors Theater of Indiana's Frog and Toad, if you go to that, then they're encouraging you to bring new and gently used books and DVDs for Riley Children's Foundation. Again, this is all part of what Printing Partners is doing. If you want to get more information about this whole project, you can go to makeadifference.me, and it's make-a-difference.me, or just go to the Printing Partners website and they'll give you more information about all this. It's a great way to celebrate the holidays.
That is a smart, smart partnership. Patrick Ball, if you immediately heard the sound of a brass-strung harp when you heard his name, yep, it's that Patrick Ball, the Celtic harpist, or harper, as they often prefer to be called. He is coming to town under the auspices of Storytelling Arts of Indiana. He'll be at the Basile Theater at the Indiana History Center this Saturday night from 7:30 to 9:30 in a family-friendly concert. Why is he coming to Storytelling Arts? Well, in addition to being a marvelous musician, he is a terrific storyteller. And he has collected a lot of stories that center on what he believes is the central message of all the winter holidays, no matter what your faith, and that is hope. Hope for something wondrous, hope for a light in the darkness. So he integrates these stories with his harp playing, and he is a not-to-be-missed artist. If you've only heard him on recordings, consider going taking somebody you love to hear Patrick Ball. His concert is called A Christmas Rose. Concert, music, and stories.
Very cool. It's always a little sad when you hear that someone is closing a gallery, but this is actually not such bad news. And let me explain. Big Car Gallery, which we just love, and we've had them on the show quite a lot, they're actually going to end their 7-year run in Fountain Square as they're expanding what they're doing. And so part of this is that they are going to have a closing party on December 14th from 7 to 9. They're actually closing down their gallery, but Big Car is going to continue its work in operating the Service Center for Culture and Community, which is a great space out at Lafayette Square neighborhood. And they're also going to continue to do their Made for Each Other community space on 10th Street and keep working with Earth House and other groups. But they're just shutting down their gallery, which is sad, but they're still going to be around. Now, one thing you can do to celebrate Big Car is that this weekend on December 4th from noon to 4, they are having a free exhibition and celebration of logos and taglines created by people that live in the Crooked Creek neighborhood on the city's northwest side. And they actually worked with 90 fourth graders from Crooked Creek Elementary to put together this exhibit, which is going to be very, very cool and should be a lot of fun. If you want to get more information about Big Car and their Made for Each Other gallery, then you can go to bigcar.org and all the information is there. But congratulations, but Big Car, we're also going to miss you the way you are, but we know you're going on to great stuff.
They're rolling on along.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, speaking of the Big Car Gallery, the Service Center for Contemporary Culture and Community, a.k.a. Big Car Service Center over on Lafayette Road, is the venue for No Exit's performance of Nutcracker. Now, there's something about the Nutcracker that people just cannot resist getting their hands on it and twisting it. You know, Gregory Hancock Dance Theater through the years has done their Nutcracker with a question mark at the end. And, of course, there's all sorts of great jazz covers of Nutcracker. Well, the No Exit performance of Nutcracker has been described as grotesquely beautiful, vaudeville meets Tim Burton.
Now that sounds fun.
You can see it at the Big Car Service Center. Performances continue through December 17th. Please note the show is for mature audiences, so don't take your little Sugar Plum Fairy daughter to this, I'm thinking.
Good to know.
You can find out more by going to noexitperformance.org and if you are unsure about what age it's appropriate for, give them a call. Their contact information is at noexitperformance.org.
If you are, however, looking for an age-appropriate nutcracker, we've already talked about the Indianapolis School of Ballet's production and the Russian School's production, and also want to mention Ballet Theater of Carmel, A Performer's Edge, is also presenting their version of a Nutcracker Suite on Saturday, December 7th at 4 and 7 at Westfield High School Auditorium. And they're also introducing two original modern pieces choreographed by Dance Kaleidoscope's Liberty Harris as part of this as well. And but the second act is the Nutcracker Suite, and it should be a lot of fun.
Very good. Hundreds of flickering luminaria in the gardens transform the landscape of old fields into a winter wonderland. That's on the grounds of the Indianapolis Museum of Art. This is all something you can take in at a free open house on Thursdays, beginning this coming Thursday, December 8th. Also on December 22nd from 5:30 to 8:30, it's a free open house. You can enjoy a hot beverage, pause to hear live seasonal music, and shop for special gifts in the greenhouse. So if you have somebody with green thumbs on your gift list, check that out.
Sounds delightful. Hey, last thing, there's a show Saturday night at Locals Only featuring Kara Jean Wallers, Kim Taylor, Bobby Lancaster, and Kate Lamont. Should be a ton of fun of this all-ladies show coming up Saturday night at Locals Only. We will be back with more gift ideas for you, though next week on that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
Dr. Matthew Meyer Bolton is the new president of the Christian Theological Seminary, or CTS, the ecumenical seminary located near the Butler campus. His past work and research has been focused on understanding the historical and contemporary connections between art and religion. Travis DiNicola spoke with Dr. Bolton to find out more.
Give me a brief sort of overview of what CTS, the Christian Theological Seminary, is. Many people know it as that sort of interesting building in the park that's near Butler, but tell me a little bit more.
That's right. We're right next to Butler, and part of that is because we are a child of Butler in a way. In the middle of the 19th century, Northwest Christian University was set up by the members of the Disciples Movement, who wanted to have a seminary that taught seminarians about how to be a pastor, but that didn't include teachings about slavery being legitimate. In other words, this was an abolitionist part of the Disciples Movement, and they wanted a seminary in non-slaveholding territory. So Northwest Christian eventually became Butler, and the Butler School of Religion, or the kind of part of that university that handled religion, eventually went independent, and that became Christian Theological Seminary, and that's who we are. So we're right adjacent to Butler, and of course just down the road from the IMA.
Right. Great location. Beautiful spot. And, you know, a lot of people remember, of course, the days when CTS used to have great theatrical productions. That was something that many people knew your organization for. But there's certainly a lot more to it than that. Part of what you do, you're actually an education institution still.
That's right. We train folks in master's programs that include counseling programs, master's of divinity programs, the classic degree for those who want to be pastors. But we have folks who want to be those pastors, want to be those counselors, and others who want to be leaders of nonprofit organizations or doctors or lawyers. We have a really wide range of students. We're still rooted in the Disciples of Christ, but we are ecumenical now. In other words, we've got lots of different, 30 different denominations are represented in our students and faculty, and we do all kinds of work with them of an educational nature. You're right, though. Our building itself is a work of art. It's it's a beautiful expression of mid-century modern architecture. Edward Larrabee Barnes, a world-renowned architect, built the building, and we house or curate, you could say, a marvelous collection of mid-century modern art. So it's itself a kind of work of art in which we live and learn. And as you know, I'm a a big believer in the idea that religion and the arts belong mm-hmm. together. And so that's part of my vision as the new president of Christian Theological Seminary, is to bring that even more to the fore. Our faculty has been working on that theme for years. We have an extraordinary faculty with respect to the arts. And so what I want to do is to bring that to the forefront of the city's mind and find a way for us to connect in more imaginative ways with the city and have them connect to us and come on campus. I can't tell you how many people have told me about that Edeveen Theater, you know, where
oh, yeah.
cars lined up around the block for those theatrical productions. And so what I'm imagining is, what if we could refurbish mm-hmm. and reintroduce the Shelton Auditorium where the theater was housed and have theatrical productions there, musical productions there, spoken word productions there. I think the sky's the limit.
Well, that's great to hear, because that is certainly something that I know many people are sentimental for. I mean, they think back of their trips to going to the Edeveen at CTS and all the great experiences they had there. And that was something that actually kind of wrapped up about the time that I moved to Indianapolis. So I didn't have that experience, but I hear about it from my wife and certainly from other people as well.
Yes, yes.
But let me just ask you, though. I mean, you are new to this position, been in Indianapolis about 4 months, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
You are the president and therefore the leader of this organization. And as you alluded to, a big part of what CTS is working on is developing leaders.
Yes.
So how did you come to this role? I know you just moved here from Boston, used to live in Michigan, but how did you come to this role of leading this leadership movement?
Well, for the past 10 years, I've been a professor of theology and worship, first at Andover Newton Theological School, which is a small seminary similar to CTS.
Mm-hmm.
And then at Harvard Divinity School. And all the way along, I was training people who want to be leaders of Christian churches. And I did my teaching and my training through the arts. Almost all of my classes included some way of engaging the arts. For example,
interesting.
There was a course at Harvard I taught for many years called Passion Play, where we looked at the history of passion plays, which, as you know, is really the origin of Western drama today. We think
yes.
of the Greeks and the Greek tradition of drama, but there was about 1,000 years after the Greeks where there wasn't much drama at all in Europe. And so the recent birth of theater was really in the medieval European scene.
Mm-hmm.
Priests trying to get you and me to come to church or trying to get their parishioners to come to church. And so just like today, using the arts to attract but also to enliven and illuminate the great ideas, the great stories in the tradition, that's the origin of passion plays. They became so popular that they took over medieval towns. And even today, in Europe and other places all over the world, you can find towns that are taken over periodically by passion plays. So we study mm-hmm. that in the course, and then we also study the particular ways in which Christian passion plays are associated with violence against Jews. That happened too often, of course. Once is too often, but it happened more often than that in medieval Europe. So we look at that difficult and shadowed history, and then we write a play. We wrote a mm-hmm. passion play. Every time we did the course, the seminar would write the play together, tackle that history of Christian anti-Judaism, and incorporate that into the play, but also read the four passion narratives in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and include scriptural language in the play. It was standing room only. The first year we did it, the Boston Globe did a story on it. Could we imagine something like that at CTS? I think we could, and I think people would come from miles around.
This is really interesting because, of course, I mean, you talked about the medieval passion plays, but you look back at whether it's Western visual art or
yes.
music,
yes.
storytelling, literature, architecture, of course, as well as theater, and really all the arts that we celebrate today have their roots, you know, either in the Renaissance or in medieval times, and very specifically with their development through the church at that time. In fact, you know, most of the churches were patrons, and that was often how the stories were told, whether it was through, as you mentioned, the passion plays, or through the beautiful stained glass or
yes.
or the murals or what have you. But yet, you know, we look at that, and that's something that's just sort of assumed when you study art history, that, you
right.
know, especially when you're studying anything between the 14 to, you know, 1700s or so, that whether it's music history or theater history, that it's tied to the church.
Yes.
But yet, the church today, in many ways, with possibly the exception of choral music, is often very disconnected from the world of the arts.
That needs to change. It is changing in some places, but you're quite right that there is a very organic connection between religion and the arts generally. In fact, if you looked at human history and just looked at the arts, the vast majority across cultures, across religions, the vast majority of the arts that human beings have created is religious art.
Exactly. I mean, the separation has really only occurred over the past 100 to 150 years.
It's very new and very strange.
Yes.
So it would be very natural for us to engage and reconnect and point to the reunions that are happening in churches here and there, but then encourage new leaders to make those connections. You know, Bach, for example. People love Johann Sebastian Bach, and you in a elevator or in a restaurant, you hear, you know, da 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 da, and everybody knows that tune, and they say, "Oh, I love Bach." But of course, that tune is Jesu, Joy of Man's Desiring. It's a piece. It's a portrait about Jesus. You might say, "Well, I don't need to know that in order to enjoy the music." And of course, that's true. You don't need to agree with Bach about Jesus either to enjoy the music. But to set it aside, to not know about it at all, is not taking Bach seriously. It's like listening to Bob Marley, but not taking his faith and conviction seriously. Mm-hmm. You have to really listen to Bob Marley, to really listen to Bach, to really read Emily Dickinson or Virginia Woolf. You need to have theological education, religious education.
And have that context.
Yes, yeah. You may or may not agree. Of course, you may be a critic, as many of these artists were. But many of them were also driven by their faith. And so faith education and arts education belong together. And my faculty at CTS has long believed that. And we need to put our best foot forward for the city to attract folks to come to great events at CTS and for us to connect to great things going on in the city so we can learn from them. That is a symbiosis that I think could really do wonderful things for the church and wonderful things for the city.
Well, Matt, I must say that this is very exciting to hear you talk about this and address it in this way. Can you give us and again, I know you've only been here, I mean, since the late summer and, you know, are still sort of, you know, getting into all this. But can you give us some maybe a preview of what people can expect from CTS?
Well, what we want to do, what we dream about is gathering a group of partners and leaders because we believe that the best ideas won't be ours. The best ideas will be ideas that come from others or that come from conversation with others. So I've already begun to gather some of those conversations so that I can get to know the city, get to know the arts organizations in the city, lift up some of my ideas, but also listen for ideas that might create that symbiosis where we have a great idea from a partner down the road here in Indy and then a great idea from our faculty or from folks at CTS, and then CTS could become the place to host that event and invite the city to engage that event. For example, my parents, when they were just married in the late 60s, they lived in Thailand. And they ran the lights, if you can picture this, in Thailand, they ran the lights at Carmina Burana. You know, dun, 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 dun. You know, a lot of people know it as an action movie soundtrack.
Sure.
So they ran the lights. So I thought that Carmina Burana, the symphony here, just did Carmina Burana recently. And so I said, you know what, I'm going to surprise them. They're visiting us in our new home. So I got them tickets and we went to Carmina Burana. Now, I'm looking through the notes. And I don't know if you know this. I didn't know this. Carmina Burana, Karl Orff, you know, it's a modern piece of music, but it's based on monastic manuscripts, medieval manuscripts of renegade monks who wrote poetry satirizing the church. But that poetry was so delightful, it was collected and kept by the monasteries. It was preserved by them. It sounds like something out of a Dan Brown novel.
Yeah, yeah.
And it shows the theological dimensions of that piece. Now imagine if Carmina Burana was done, but done in a way that highlighted its theological dimension. Maybe it's preceded by a beautiful, engaging lecture, or maybe it's followed by a panel discussion. I think there would be an audience that would love to explore that beautiful, beloved work of art.
Well, certainly.
But do it theologically as well.
Well, and Carmina Burana is also one of the most popular pieces that David Hautoy has ever choreographed for Dance Kaleidoscope.
Yes.
And certainly, so there's a lot of, you know, people who come to that piece in different ways in the city and know it in different ways, but may not understand that full context. Very interesting work you've set out in front of you here.
We think so too. David is already a wonderful partner of ours, and we're just reaching out and calling for those who are interested to engage with us in this process. We need donors, but we also need visionaries, people who can have the insight and the imagination to develop develop these kinds of programs. I think it would be a flagship thing for CTS, but also for Indianapolis to begin to put these pieces back together again.
Let me ask you one more question before I let you go here, and that is earlier on you mentioned that CTS has a collection of mid-century art. Is that something that people can come and visit and see when you're open?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a really marvelous collection. A lot of it comes from the Irwin Miller collection.
Mm-hmm.
And Irwin Miller, of course, a great civic leader, an industrialist, a kind of philanthropist and visionary for Indianapolis and Columbus and central Indiana in general, and the country in many ways. And if anybody's interested in getting a tour of that collection, please contact us. We're also looking for people who can help us to think about that collection in new and imaginative ways. What are new forms of exhibiting that we could imagine together?
Well, I must admit that I was not aware of the collection. Any specific artists you can mention that are included in the collection? Or?
Well, we had a guest from the IMA,
mm-hmm.
and he came in. He said, "Where's your Nicholson? Where's your Nicholson?" And this is a new artist to me, mm-hmm. but we have it's a beautiful wall-sized painting, abstract, and it is extremely engaging, insured for a lot of money, and it's just a remarkable piece of art in the history of art. And so to have it at CTS and to be able to think about it in theological terms and in terms that relate to how do we train our leaders. One thing I think about is this. Pastors and counselors, chaplains who go out and to lead churches, they are curators too.
Mm-hmm.
Choral music, you mentioned it, but also visual art, architecture, churches, synagogues, mosques, these are curators of our great artistic traditions. So what we need to do is to train them to be curators and to be sensitive in people who enjoy and delight in the arts so they can help others do the same.
Travis DiNicola with Dr. Matthew Meyer Bolton, the new president of the Christian Theological Seminary. To learn more about CTS's work and programs, visit cts.edu, cts.edu.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Bocelli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4, when I'll find out about an event celebrating David Baker's 80th birthday.
I'll get a preview of the touring production of The Million Dollar Quartet coming to Indy.
And I'll have a last sit-down with Max Anderson, who will be leaving the IMA for Dallas at the end of the year. Plus, we'll have our arts calendar we call What'll We Do?
So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you, and by the Center for the Performing Arts, presenting the 2011-2012 season in three first-class venues. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.